Hey gang, it's Wednesday, August 10th. Welcome to the Behind the Numbers Reimagining Retail Show, an e-marketer podcast. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm Marcus, and today I'm guest hosting for Sarah. Today's guests, we have Andrew Lipsman, who is one of our principal analysts covering retail and e-commerce.
Hey, Marcus.
Hey there, chap. And we also have Blake Drosch, one of our senior analysts on that very team.
Hey, guys. Good to be here.
Hey, buddy. So we're talking connected fitness today, but we start, of course, with news and reviews, where I give the news and the guest, Andrew and Blake, each tell me their reviews. Today's headline is a July 27th piece from TechCrunch writer Lucas Matney, titled FTC Sues Meta to Block Acquisition of VR Fitness App. He explains that the FTC filed an injunction to block Meta's acquisition of the FR Studio Within, best known more recently for its subscription VR workout app called Supernatural. Mr. Matney notes a price for the Within deal was never announced, but a report from The Information pinned the deal at about $400 million. So Andrew, I'll start with you. This headline of FTC sues Meta to block acquisition of VR fitness app. Your review of this headline in 60 seconds is?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a headline that can fly under the radar, but it's actually pretty significant. The FTC is getting some real teeth here and getting out in front of big tech making acquisitions in new areas. Usually the argument on antitrust, I think, has to do with, you know, taking over too much market share, but it's usually in a more mature market. I mean, this is a very, very nascent market. So it almost reminds me of like the idea of get out and tackle these issues before, you know, the virus spreads or before they become too powerful. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a real change in tone that can have significant implications. And it's interesting that the venture capital community, perhaps not surprisingly so, has been pretty vocal against this because they think it's going to have a chilling effect on the potential for a lot of startups in this space, which is an emergent space, to get acquired by big tech companies who have the deep pockets.
Blake, your review of this headline in 60 seconds is?
Yeah, I was jumping off on what Andrew already mentioned. This is obviously something that's a little bit different to how the FTC usually operates. And it seems, you know, clear that the FTC is sort of looking at the acquisition of Instagram as an example of like what can happen when Meta or another tech company operates this way, when you have a nascent app that went on to become one of the biggest platforms in social media, but it never really competed directly with Facebook at its height because it already owned them. I mean, of course, we can only speculate whether or not Instagram like would have reached the heights that it did without being owned by Facebook, but it's clear that the FTC doesn't believe that to be the case. But I guess my sort of take as a non-lawyer perspective, because it does seem like this is setting itself up for just a long battle in the courts because it is sort of an unprecedented route that the FTC is taking. I think Meta, you know, does have the right to acquire fitness apps and hardware, just like all the other tech companies have been doing. But Supernatural, which is the fitness app that's owned by within the company, is in direct competition with Beat Saber, which is like another gamified fitness app that is already owned by Meta. If you're unfamiliar with these two platforms, they are very, very similar in experience. They're almost identical games. So when you look at it on app versus app level, it does make a little bit more sense, you know, as to why the FTC is looking at it, because it could potentially stunt the competition within this very small sect of gamified fitness apps. But I think when you're looking at it with as Meta's business model and their ambitions in VR and the metaverse as a whole, then it does get a little bit more complicated. And I think that's why this is raising a lot more eyebrows than, you know, it may have been alternatively when you're just looking at this very small sect of gamified fitness apps.
All right, if people have listened to the Weekly Listen, then they're not surprised that Blake went way over his 60-second time. I'm sorry, Sarah, I tried.
I tried too, but I'm
no
sorry.
No respect.
I'm just long-winded.
It wasn't that. It was I'm hosting, and so you were like, I couldn't care less about the time limit.
Yeah, that's accurate too.
Yeah, that's fair. Sorry, Sarah. Anyway, that's what we've got time for news and reviews. Let's talk about some connected fitness now. And our first segment talking about connected fitness is, of course, Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss interesting retail topics. today we're talking all about connected fitness. We're going to start with a definition because folks might be thinking to themselves that can mean any number of things, and it does to different people. So Andrew, we'll take a definition from you with regards to connected fitness and how we're going to be thinking about slash discussing the topic.
Sure. So the quickest way to think about connected fitness is through the examples. Think of it as fitness enabled through digital screens, but broadly larger screens like Peloton, where you'd have a stationary bike with a digital screen that people watch for that connected fitness experience, a mirror device, which is now owned by Lululemon, which you use for full-length cardio. And Tonal is another one that's similar to Mirror, but it has built-in resistance training and strength training. So that's really what we're talking about with connected fitness. I would also say that we very easily will widen the aperture to talk about digital fitness a bit more broadly. And that's where you start to talk about more things like wearables and apps and all these other sort of ancillary pieces that are a big part of this broader space of digital fitness. So that's how we'll sort of distinguish those two definitions.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, when's your report come out?
Report comes out this week and it's called Digital Fitness Brands. So I should also say, you know, why are we talking about connected fitness on a retail podcast? Because it really dovetails specifically with what's happening with some very, very large brands mm-hmm. in the retail and commerce space.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get to those in a second. One of the charts from your report is from MyCode, and they're looking at health and wellness smart device ownership among American adults. And surprising to me to see smart fitness equipment was number one, 44% of people saying they currently own this. Smart sleep tracker, 42%. Smart bathroom scale, 35%, and then smart watch and fitness tracker each had 29%. Andrew, you recently bought an Apple Watch, speaking of smart watches, on Prime Day, I believe. Why did you decide on Apple for your smart device?
Well, I was writing a very convincing report, and I convinced myself that I needed it. No, I mean, I'd been thinking about it for a while. I actually had an Amazon Halo band when it first came out. It was a cheap device, and I kind of wanted to get a little bit more into health tracking, and it was kind of good, and maybe it lasted me a year, though. I knew I wanted something better. I liked the band experience. I didn't really want an Apple Watch, but bottom line is what I realized is when I thought about how I was going to work out and the tracking that I wanted to do, I was already doing some of it on my iPhone. I wanted to do more video classes, and now there's Apple Fitness Plus. I just realized that the Apple Watch was that digital tether that I needed for my experience, and I wanted everything to work together without having to think about it. Apple's really good at that. So even though I wasn't really looking for, you know, the bigger watch face, I sort of bit the bullet and took it because it's going to do and has been doing what I want it to do.
Blake, what's your personal relationship with connected fitness?
Yeah, I wasn't a gym goer before the pandemic, so I didn't really have the need to outfit, you know, my home with any, you know, connected fitness equipment. But I am a runner, and I've been using the, you know, Nike Run app for years. And I love it. I've never, you know, go on runs without it. I've not really an Apple Watch person just because I wear a traditional watch, but I have been, you know, looking into digital fitness bands. I, you know, would like sort of the added health tracking features that, you know, I do have on my phone, but I don't, like, I think as a consumer, you know, just personally, I haven't had the need to really get anything that's a little bit deeper in terms of like monitoring, you know, what's going on with my workouts. I think maybe as I get a little older and maybe, you know, the ticker starts becoming a little bit more of a concern, I might become a little bit more interested in monitoring my heart rate and things like that. Mm-hmm. But right now, I think, you know, between the Apple Health Tracker and the Nike Run Club app, I get what I need from my phone right now.
Right.
Marcus, you can tell which of us is over 40 and which is under 40.
I won't address that right now, but I'm going to let listeners have a guess at that. So in your report, Andrew, Digital Fitness Brands 2022, you centered the discussion on the big four of connected fitness. And you have Nike, Lululemon, Peloton, and Apple. So Nike, Lululemon, Peloton, and Apple. But you could have gone with Adidas. You could have gone with, there's a chart here you have from Think Now Research asking ownership of smart fitness devices. Nordic Track, Fight Camp, Climber. Could have gone with the Google Pixel Watch. Why these four companies? Why Nike, Lululemon, and Peloton, and Apple? Why do you decide to focus on these guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think what it comes down to is all of them have some really similar dimensions that places them really well to sort of own or lead this space. It begins with aspirational branding. I mean, we're talking about four really high-end prestige brands. They have, you know, connected fitness technology, each one of them. They sort of live in the world of premium-priced physical goods. In Apple and Peloton's case, that's like technology hardware. In Nike and Lululemon, that's primarily apparel. They all have digital media content experiences. Several of them have connected fitness experiences like we've talked about. Nike, as Blake mentioned, is really strong in apps. And they also have experiential retail environments. And that's kind of an interesting one in that as I think about, you know, the future of hybrid fitness, working out between home, on connected screens, you know, outside and in gyms, I could see all of these players moving into fitness experiences in physical, I don't want to say retail, but physical like environments that are maybe hybrid retail and fitness centers.
Mm. Yeah, I want to focus in on a part of your report where you talk about, so you write, fitness is a new leading aspirational lifestyle and consumer megatrend. Fitness as part of a broader trend in health and wellness has emerged as a new status symbol. Whilst past generations were more likely to reflect status through conspicuous consumption, younger generations convey status through experiences and aspirational pursuits, including fitness enabled by social media. What are some of your thoughts on this shifting mindset? Because it's not until I read this and I thought to myself, actually, yeah, these generations, these younger generations are thinking about status differently.
It's very different. And at one point, I was almost convincing myself that fitness was the new luxury. I don't think luxury is going anywhere. But you've seen a generational shift here in how we look at something that is really just signaling wealth, whereas this prestige fitness, you know, sort of subtly signals wealth or affluence. But really, I think what it signals is something more significant about what's scarce in today's world, which is time and flexibility. If you are walking around in your athleisure, you know, apparel, I think that sort of signals something about the sort of lifestyle that you can lead. And it signals that kind of independence. And at the same time, it also signals affluence. So, and then it's enabled by social media. People really, it's cool to show off that you are minding your health.
Mm-hmm. So the competition between these players is ratcheting up. What do we make of that? What's going on here?
Yeah, it's gotten really intense, really fast here. So what's interesting is all of these companies have over the past couple of years really gotten into each other's turf. It really began with Lululemon acquiring Mirror, which I thought put them kind of on a head-on collision course with Peloton. They sort of became the same company in some sense at that point. Apple then unveiled Apple Fitness Plus, which took them into Mirror and Peloton space. Peloton launched branded apparel in 2021. Peloton then and Lululemon started suing each other for patent infringement claims. Nike sued Lululemon over Mirror patent infringement at the beginning of this year. Lululemon debuted its first line of shoes earlier this year, getting into Nike space. So all of them have been kind of going at it because there's a lot at stake. These are really profitable opportunities and big lines of business. The only two, by the way, who have not really butted heads are Nike and Apple. And smart listeners may notice that Apple's CEO Tim Cook is actually on the Nike board. So it almost seems like they have kind of agreed to be more complementary in this space than direct competitors.
Mm-hmm. So I want to quickly look at how many US adults are using connected fitness devices. What's the market here? So Andrew, when I first looked at the numbers, I looked at 43 million adult connected fitness users. 43 million we predict here at Insider Intelligence, 44.5 next year, 46 the year after that, 48, 49. So it's pretty slow growth going from now onwards. That's about 16% of the population using a connected fitness device this year. Or I should say the definition we have is adults who use an interactive fitness platform for exercise like Peloton or an iFit at least once a month. So 16% using one this year, 18% using one by 2026. So that seems like slow growth. But you pointed out to me that you actually have to go back a couple of years to notice why this user figure is significant.
Yeah, we pulled demand forward, basically doubled, I think, the market from 2019 to now. So it had this really outsized growth and it just needs to kind of catch up with itself a bit, as a lot of these people who may have come into the market in 2023, 2024, 2025 already came into the market. Mm-hmm. I think that's all it is. And so now the market's just kind of leveling out as a result.
Yeah. Blake, for you, I mean, Andrew's talked about these four players. You peered the report, Nike, Lululemon, Peloton, and Apple. What do you make of these four players? Is one stand out more so to you than others? Were there ones where you were talking about, Andrew, about which four to cover? Were there ones that maybe got left out that you thought we should consider?
Well, the one that that has really sort of caught my eye over the last, you know, year or so is what Lululemon has done. I think they've really come to prominence as a premium lifestyle athleisure brand, which is, when you look at the sort of this flywheel that Andrew is describing, is really the hardest piece of the puzzle to attain. And then the way that they've sort of risen to become, you know, a competitor with Nike and Adidas and a lot of these brands that have been sort of the premium upper echelon fitness brands for years, for decades, the way that they've sort of gotten into that market is very impressive. And at the same time, though, they're making these investments with Mirror, and they're expanding into footwear to the point where when they decided that they were going to expand into footwear, that made serious waves, I think. And that's, it immediately put them in the conversation with the, you know, the top selling, you know, sneaker brands, which again have been around for so long. So I just think, you know, it's super impressive the way that they've really quickly come to prominence in all of these areas. And they have a really strong presence and a lot of momentum in all of these areas. Whereas even when you look at, you know, Apple, as Andrew mentioned, like they have a lot of momentum, but they can still sort of coexist with Nike, which also has, you know, its own, like, you know, really strong prominence in all of these areas. But I think that Lululemon, in terms of being well-rounded and really becoming a prominent player that quickly is very, very impressive to me.
Yeah, thinking about becoming a prominent player quite quickly. Andrew, there's a lot of stake in commanding the leadership position here in digital fitness. Why is that?
Yeah, well, if you think of this from the vantage point of retail brands, and maybe more specifically lifestyle brands, you know, it's not always the most profitable business in retail because of the sort of costs that you have, cost of goods sold, cost to acquire customers, all of that sort of stuff in the traditional model of the world. But digital has changed everything. And now these brands are able to embark on a growth trajectory that makes them, I think, radically more profitable and able to grow into just much more massive consumer brands as a result through a new flywheel. Mm-hmm. And this flywheel, I think, so there are three kind of pillars of the flywheel: brand, media, and commerce. And again, it's enabled fundamentally by digital and digital economics. Begins with the brand, which we've already mentioned. It's an aspirational brand. In many of the cases, that brand then gets extended by brand ambassadors. So think with Nike, it's star athletes. With Peloton, it's Peloton instructors. And that brand then, it can extend into social media channels through those types of personalities especially. And that also helps kind of bring a bigger audience into the fold and pull them into digital content experiences. So that's the media part of the flywheel, and also apps, a family of apps in Nike's case. And so now you've got people engaged through this digital content experience, and that actually then enables the third piece, which is commerce. It lowers acquisition costs for direct-to-consumer e-commerce, which Nike and Lululemon and all these companies really are leaders in D2C. It allows you to get people involved in loyalty and membership programs. And it allows for some other digital commerce experiences like marketplaces and resale, which can actually help fuel even bigger sales for the brand. In Nike's case, they have the Sneakers app, which is not a third-party marketplace, but it has marketplace dynamics like mm-hmm. eBay for very exclusive shoe drops. But then also some of them like Lululemon are going into resale. So that actually allows you to extend your brand down market to people who really maybe aspire to buy your brand, but can't afford it as easily. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden through that commerce, now the brand expands even further and it reinforces then that top part of the flywheel again. And it can, you continue to grow and you get into more profitable revenue streams.
So Andrew, I'll start with you and then quickly to Blake, just to wrap up here. Looking at this flywheel, Andrew, who do you think, which of the four companies that we've talked about, who do you think is doing the best job so far?
Oh, putting me on the spot with this. I mean, I think all, you know, you're talking about four leaders that they're all doing a great job.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not comparable because they're all doing a different job at the
same
thing.
Well, I'll say this. I think there's a lot of potential for all of them to take the next step in translating media to commerce by integrating more shoppable media. Mm. They haven't quite done this yet. Peloton, you know, they're selling branded apparel, start selling it directly through those channels. Lululemon and Mirror haven't quite come together yet to do that. So there's a lot of potential that's untapped. That's the unlock that I want to see, but all of them are really well positioned to take full advantage of the opportunity.
Blake, when you look at this flywheel, what jumps out to you?
There's just so much competition with so many just really, really top companies. But I would have to say, on one hand, Apple, just due to the fact that they've already been in the, you know, digital health space, digital fitness space with the Apple Watch, which is hugely, hugely popular. But that just taps into the entire Apple ecosystem. So when you look at the dominance that they have in other areas, they can easily, just through the use of people, if you have a, you know, an iPhone, if you have a, you know, Apple computer, it's so logical that if you want to get into connected fitness to remain with an Apple product. Mm-hmm. Same thing can be said with Nike, though. You have just brand allegiance is just so strong with Nike that if you are interested in, you know, getting a little bit deeper into connected fitness, the name recognition and the fact that so many customers already have a relationship with the Nike brand, once again, just makes it a direct funnel into these other types of connected fitness experiences.
I have to agree with Blake on Apple, putting Apple at the top there, maybe because it's an ecosystem play for them and it's been successful. And I'm living proof of that by buying an Apple Watch.
Yep. That's what we've got time for Retail Me This, Retail Me That. We'll be back the other side of the break to talk about connected fitness as we rank the three most interesting acquisition possibilities in the space. If you're looking for more great content, check out eMarketer's upcoming online events. Our live video webinars help marketing professionals make sense of the ever-changing landscapes of digital media, commerce, advertising, and technology. eMarketer subject matter experts and guests from top brands such as Google, Reddit, Salesforce, Amazon, Condé Nast, and more break down current marketing challenges and provide viewers the analysis they need to make informed business decisions. You can even ask them questions live. These webinars are insightful, entertaining, and incredibly timely. Head to insiderintelligence.com/events to register today. Hey folks, welcome back from the break. It's now time for pop-up rankings, where we look at specific examples and rank them. This week, Andrew and Blake are ranking the top three most interesting acquisition possibilities in connected fitness. So there are a lot of connected fitness startups out there today. And obviously now that the pandemic boom seems to have subsided, a lot of them may be looking for an exit. So we'll start. So we've got three for you. We'll start with one from Blake. Blake, what is one of the top three most interesting acquisition possibilities in connected fitness?
Yeah, Amazon buying Tonal. It's one that I know Andrew's discussed on the podcast previously. Sort of a no-brainer because they've already invested. Amazon's already invested in the company. But when you look at Amazon's larger push into just healthcare in general, I think that this could be a really key piece to just building out its larger involvement in the healthcare space and just the health world. And it just parlays into the fitness world perfectly. Also, the Tonal product. I mean, Amazon has a lot of experience with electronics, and this is basically a pretty sophisticated piece of electronics that also has its, you know, own weight resistance system built into it. So it is somewhat complex. I think it's something that Amazon knows a lot about in terms of being that Trojan horse to get the hardware inside the home and then continue to create revenue through, you know, subscriptions and other types of experiences. So it does seem like a really, you know, sort of good fit for Amazon in a product sense as well.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, your thoughts on this potential deal?
Yeah, again, it's a no-brainer, right? Amazon wants to be in the home as much as possible. They also, I think, are always thinking about personal data. So they've got the Halo band and some cardio fitness type of data. I will say one of the things, at least in the first generation of that product, that you can do is do a body scan, which is like giving Amazon way too much data that you literally scan your body for body composition. But if they're getting, you know, they have bigger ambitions in the health space, this is a way to start collecting a pretty well-rounded view of people's health profile.
Yeah. So Tonal, for folks who aren't, you might know the Peloton. So Peloton's the bike. Tonal, so they describe themselves as an entire gym in your home. It's basically a smart...
it's a mirror with arms with resistance bands on it.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's basically the Bowflex of, yeah, you know, of 2020, or the modern day. Yeah.
And it it comes with a bench as well. And I used one at a friend's house and they're phenomenal. And my first thought after using this was, why aren't these in gyms? Hotel fitness centers, sports team facility. Like, why do I go into a gym and have 1,000 different pieces of like machines to like have to go to each different one to do different things? Why isn't, at least the fancy gyms that can afford it, why haven't they, maybe they have, maybe I'm just not in the fancy gyms. Why haven't they bought like 80 of these things so you can just go in and use a Tonal or go in and use a Peloton?
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, sort of exactly what the use case for this sort of hybrid growth of digital fitness that Andrew was referring to at the top of the podcast. It seems like it's going to be a no-brainer that mm-hmm. people like to work out at home. They also want to go to a gym sometimes. So the ability to sort of like, you know, log in and log out no matter where you are can, right, you know, really like help the growth that's, you know, going to persist a lot further than just the, oh, I can't go to the gym, I'm going to be at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the devices are just around and yeah, you have your login and you can just interact with whatever device happens to be nearby. Let's move to another one. Andrew, one of your top three most interesting acquisition possibilities for connected fitness?
Yeah, and this is pretty speculative, but Google acquiring Echelon. Echelon is very similar to Peloton and having bikes and treads. And I just think Google, similar to Amazon, has pretty big health ambitions. They're working on a lot of different moonshots at the same time. Remains to be seen how all these things will come together, but we have seen Google acquire Fitbit, which is pretty big in the wearable space. Probably underappreciated. So this is a way, I think, of rounding out their hardware and have a more integrated, movable and stationary experience within the home. And I Google has experience in hardware. So I think they could make an acquisition like this pretty seamlessly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Google at-home indoor exercise bike Echelon is our second most interesting acquisition possibility in connected fitness. The first one was Amazon and Tonal. Gents, let's get a third from you, if I may.
So the last one, this has actually been talked about quite a bit, and that is Apple acquiring Peloton, one of the big four. I actually don't think it'll happen. Interesting to speculate. Apple can basically do what they want if they feel like they want to shell out some money to acquire any company, but they tend to not like trying to integrate other brands. And frankly, they have such technology hardware prowess that if they really wanted to, they could build their own version of this very easily, I think. Mm-hmm. And probably improve upon it. So I just don't see the rationale. It's fun to talk about, but I don't actually see that one happening.
Okay.
Yeah, this is sort of a strange analogy, but for some reason, when I think about that, I think about Apple's acquisition of Beats, where it was like such a big acquisition because Beats was such a big name in headphones. But you know, fast forward however many years it's been, the AirPod is that's the predominant piece of, you know, hardware that Apple is selling in that space. And it's, you know, a technology that they came up with on their own. So I wonder, you know, if Apple sort of like went after Peloton, it's very similar to Beats in terms of like how significant the brand recognition would be. But looking back on that, I mean, why wouldn't Apple, which is so good at designing their own hardware, just, you know, create something that they could sell to their already, you know, really engaged audience who already has this, you know, family of Apple hardware.
So three, we have Amazon and Tonal. Google and Echelon and Apple and Peloton. We talked about Facebook at the top, gents, and the fact that the FTC is basically blocking them from this acquisition of VR fitness app Supernatural, which is owned by a VR studio within. Do you think that Facebook is going to be able to kind of muscle its way into the space at some point, or is that them, do you think, kind of shut out as the big four charge down this road?
I mean, there's a sense that fitness is the killer app, or one of the killer apps for the metaverse. So I don't think Facebook is done trying to be acquisitive, but given where the FTC is at currently, they're going to have to try and find a new angle. So I don't know exactly what that is, if it maybe has to lean more on the hardware side with some of the ancillary products beyond just the headset. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be, but you have to think they're going to try again.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Andrew.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you to Blake.
Thanks.
And thank you to Victoria, who edits the show. Thank you to everyone listening in. Sarah will be back with you next Wednesday for another episode of Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast. And I'll see you folks tomorrow for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, also an e-marketer podcast.